From the world-famous city of New Orleans, it's the Black and Blue Report. Starring Sean Kelly, Producer Dan, D-Dub and the Black and Blue Orchestra.
Yeah.
And the Benchwarmers. Today's special guests include the New Orleans Saints, the New Orleans Pelicans, and whoever else we could get to stop by. Online and worldwide, it's the Black and Blue Report. Live, sort of, from Studio B, here's Sean Kelly.
How goes it? It's the Tuesday edition of the Black and Blue Report. Hope this finds you well. It is a glorious day over here on Airline Drive as we come to you from Studio B over at the campus of the Pelicans and the Saints. I'm Sean Kelly. This is the Black and Blue Report, as we mentioned, the podcast for Saints and Pelicans fans. We've got a lot to talk about here on this Tuesday, and we're glad that you're alongside as we recap another Pelicans win last night as they took down the Brooklyn Nets in overtime, 109-104. That's three straight now for the Pelicans. And three straight over the East, and not just the East, but three playoff folks from the East. First Atlanta, then the Miami Heat, and then last night the Brooklyn Nets, the best record in the East since January 1, took overtime, but man, it was a lot of fun last night as the Pelicans completed their second largest comeback in franchise history. That's right, they were down 22 points and got that thing to overtime, go on to win by 5, 109-104. So we're going to recap that game here in just a moment. Of course, you've got the NFL owners meetings going on in Orlando, and John DeShazer will rejoin us here on this Tuesday, give us a full report of what's happening this morning in Orlando. He talked to several NFL coaches as the AFC coaches spoke today, and he'll give us an update on whether or not any rules were voted upon over in Orlando today. Todd Graffanini is our guest a bit later in the show. We'll turn our attention to college baseball. LSU and Tulane tonight at Greer Field Church and Stadium. As the Green Wave and Tigers renew that rivalry, should be a good one tonight. And then we'll wrap up the show here on this Tuesday with some final thoughts. Back to that basketball game for just a moment. Last night, the Pelicans improved their overtime record to 5-0. That's the best overtime record in the NBA. And while they have asked a lot of Tyreke Evans and Anthony Davis, those two guys answered again. Davis last night didn't get to 28 points to run his streak to 9 straight in that category, but he did get 24 points and 14 rebounds. That's his 37th double-double of the year. And then Tyreke Evans set a new season high last night with 33 points, 10 rebounds. That's his 9th double-double. And then he was a huge factor, especially with 14 points in the third quarter. Let's let you relive some of the highlights from last night as we'll play our highlight pack from the Pelicans and the Nets here on Black and Blue Report.
Toledovich, long three, no good. Long rebound for Rivers. And Rivers is going to push it up the floor. He's going right to the rack. Layup, no. Dunk follow out of nowhere by Davis. Take care of the women and children. 21-18. Allen Anderson throws it in. Williams catches, leaves weak side. Gutierrez rises point blank. He missed it. Rebound, Brooklyn. Over to Williams. Corner left for three, and he got it. Minus one headset here shortly, apparently. 47-32. Brooklyn's on the ice here a bit. Evans goes over the top to Roberts. Ooh, he thought about another three. Drives off the right angle to the top of the key. Hits the Jensen. Rolling, catching a dunk with the right hand. Hammered it home. Timeout, Brooklyn. The Pelicans have cut it to 8. Evans has it way out front court left. 4 along the baseline for the Pelicans. 6-5. Evans, left of a high middle screen by Ajinsa, still above the arc. 2-1 for three. Bang! And one! And one! Possible four-point play here at the end of the third quarter. Well, well, well. Rose to Evans, left of the key. Guarded by Joe Johnson. Evans turns to face the top side of the lane. Drives, climbs past Plumlee, reaches and scores. He can't be stopped here in the second half. The Pelicans grabbed their first lead since 9-11 left in the first quarter when it was 7-5. Now Brooklyn can tie with the three. Pierce drives, left side of the lane. Stopped at the baseline. Goes out wing left to Joe Johnson. Dribbles at the top of the key. Back to Pierce, angle left for the three and ties it. 98-98, 7-6, 5. They'll put two out on Evans. between the rings, throws to his left, Angelev, Morrow rises for a contested two and the win, and he missed it off the back of the iron. We're going to overtime in New Orleans. 15 to shoot, throw it to Davis, left of the key. Turns, swings it in front of Plumlee, beats Evans, wing left, double team, throw it up top, Morrow for three and another one. Anthony Morrow with his second triple in overtime, makes it 109-102, and you start to feel real good now. Looking, throws it into Johnson, near sideline. Goes up top, Williams went to go look for a three. Fires, he missed off the back of the rim. Rebound, slips past two Pelicans. Williams for three again, angle left. Missed that long ball, 2-1, this is over. Pierce fires and misses at the buzzer, and the Pelicans win in overtime. What a finish. Defense saves the day for the Pelicans in the end.
All right, so that's a little taste of the Pelicans' 30th win of the season last night. They'll try and make it four in a row. They have yet to win four straight this season, and I think this will be the third try they get, but they'll host Chris Paul and the Clippers tomorrow night. Still to come, John DeShazer from Orlando, Tom Graffinini talking college baseball, Tulane and LSU specifically. And up next, we'll go back to the locker room, where we'll talk with Tyreek Evans about last night's win at the Smoothie King Center.
Check out All-Star Anthony Davis and the Pelicans at the Smoothie King Center as we host some of the NBA's most exciting teams during this March homestand. Don't miss Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and the LA Clippers on Wednesday the 26th, and the Utah Jazz on Friday, March 28th. Tickets are available for these all-star packed games for as low as $11. So call 504-525-HOOP or visit pelicans.com to get your seats today.
I'm Pelicans forward Jason Smith. Every day, one in six Louisiana households are at risk of hunger.
I'm attorney Morris Bark, and every day Second Harvest Food Bank helps thousands of our local neighbors in need. That's why I'm teaming up with the New Orleans Pelicans to ask you to join us in the fight against hunger.
Text the word Pelicans to 80088 to join the Second Harvest family, and you will also have a chance to win autographed Pelicans gear, floor seats to a game, and much more.
Join us, because together we can solve hunger.
This is Pelican forward Tyreek Evans, and you're listening to the Black and Blue Report.
I think I mentioned on the air last night after the broadcast that this team right now is really showing us a glimpse of what perhaps is to come. But certainly at this point of the season, with the playoffs now out of the picture for the Pelicans, this is a team worth watching right now. We already knew that about Anthony Davis, but there are others stepping up and giving us great nights, especially at home here in late March. Boy, it sure was a lot of fun again as the Pelicans won in overtime last night. They've won three in a row, and following the ball game, as we usually do on the radio network, we visit courtside with one of our stars of the game. This is my visit with Tyreek Evans after he poured in a game-high 33 in helping the Pelicans to a win over the Nets.
Tyreek Evans, star of the game tonight with a new season-high 33 points, and his ninth double-double of the year with 10 rebounds, joins us courtside. Congratulations, Tyreek. What a ball game.
Man, it was. I mean, we never give up. They came in first half. You know, they pushed us around. They smacked at the ball. We didn't get calls. You know, I got on the rest a little. Coach got on us at halftime. You know, and we picked it up. You know, my main thing was to try to pick it up, you know, and keep playing my game, and that's what I did.
What happened at halftime? You said Coach got on you guys a little bit. What about maybe in particular?
He got on us. I mean, you know, when we was up there, you know, they pushed us around, you know, got on us the first half, you know, and, you know, we're not that type of team. You know, we're young, but we still going to fight, you know, and so second half I went out intact, you know, did what I did, you know, finding guys and just trying to play hard. You know, we played together as a team. You know, it was a great team win.
I don't know if you're aware or not, you had 14 in the third quarter. How about that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was in attack mode. I mean, they was talking trash. You know, we wasn't backing down. You know, we ain't going to back down from nobody. You know, we in our home court. You know, and we did a good job, you know, finishing the game out strong. It was a great win for us.
Tyreek, it's the second largest comeback in franchise history. You're a part of it tonight. You guys had a look at the end of regulation. Was it okay? Did you feel okay going to overtime, or did you feel a bit down because you couldn't finish in regulation?
I knew we was going bad. I mean, it was a new game, you know. But Amo said it the best on the bench. You know, he said we got to win this game. You know, it don't matter how we do it, but we got to win. You know, we found the way to do it as a team. We got stops. You know, B-Rod hit big shots. Amo hit big shots. And they helped when I was bringing the ball up. I found guys. You know, and everybody played big tonight, man. It was a good team win.
Tyreek, I don't need to tell you this because I think you already know. Most people around this league have pretty much written you guys off for the season. And here now you've won three straight. You've knocked off three Eastern Conference playoff teams and are playing your best basketball here in late March.
Definitely, man. I just got comfortable. It was tough, you know, up and down, you know, coming in, you know, coming off the bench, trying to figure things out, you know, thinking a lot, you know. But I got it down. You know, I'm playing good basketball, you know, and hopefully I can keep it up for the rest of the season and carry it on to next year.
All right, one more thing. You all give one back to a team that pushed you around a little bit in February in Brooklyn. That Clipper team's done some pushing around, too, and now you get them on Wednesday.
Yeah, definitely. We got to be ready for that, man. Blake and those guys, they came in, you know, they've been handing this to us, you know, every time we've been playing, you know. But, you know, we can't back down, you know, on Wednesday. We got to, you know, start from the beginning, you know, and, you know, compete. You know, that's what we do best.
Well, thanks for a thrill ride tonight. As always, appreciate your time. Congratulations, Tyreek.
Thanks, appreciate it.
All right, so that's Tyreek Evans before he even went to the locker room last night after he dumped in 33 to the Pelicans' win over the Brooklyn Nets. Again, a great night at Smoothie King Center last night. It continues, the fun that is, and this homestand tomorrow night when the Clippers come to town. 7 o'clock tip-off tomorrow night, 504-525-HOOP or pelicans.com to get your tickets to see if the Pelicans can make it four wins in a row and continue this run of great play that they've exhibited over the last three games and really dating back now 2 weeks or so under head coach Monty Williams. Let's turn our attention to football here on the Black and Blue Report. As we mentioned, John DeShazer still to come from Orlando with an update from the NFL owners' meetings. And speaking of owners, just a short time ago, John visited exclusively one-on-one with Saints and Pelicans owner Tom Benson. So before we bring John into the program today, let's play that visit recorded just a short time ago in Orlando between John and Mr. Tom Benson.
Mr. Benson, you're here at these meetings, but we know the meetings in Atlanta in a couple of months in May probably will mean a little bit more to New Orleans anyway. That's when the 2018 Super Bowl is going to be awarded. Just give us your thoughts about how important it is for New Orleans to get another Super Bowl.
Well, first of all, you know, we're prepping for that right now. You know, we got Rita with us and Dennis and Mickey. So we all patting a little on the backs and looking forward to that meeting out there and how important it's going to be to New Orleans. Everybody knows that. And, of course, everybody knows that they love New Orleans, you know. They got to be careful, as they tell me. We don't come back every year. Well, it's not quite that much, but they love to come to New Orleans, and I think that we're in good shape to get it. You know, we can't ever tell what will happen, but as far as I can see, we're in good shape to get that Super Bowl.
Now, this offseason, the Saints have again done a nice job in terms of getting free agents. Somehow or another, Mickey Loomis and those guys find ways to create space to get players for the team. Talk about how you feel about the offseason and how the team has improved.
You know, first of all, Mickey and the group, they work all year on us. You know, it's just not at the last minute or anything. The season isn't over when they already involved a great deal in what they're planning to do and what they're going to do. And so it's at least as soon as it's over anyway. And that I think we got a group of people there that are really dedicated to bringing us better players, you know, or in some cases a need. We're really looking forward to a great season.
Now, finally, the Saints are going to be splitting training camp this year between New Orleans and also West Virginia. And talk about that move. You know, obviously the Saints have great fans in New Orleans, but this is an opportunity to kind of spread the wealth and expand the fan base also.
Yeah, well, you know, we're not going to be going that long, and that so we're going to take care of our New Orleans fans. You know, they're most important to us. But we think it's going to be a good thing for the team. The first 2 weeks are very hard, and they'll be where they're isolated, dedicated to what they're doing, and I think it's going to be good for our club, and that's the main reason why we're going. We're not going for any other reason. The people that run that resort deal or whatever you call it is very good to work with. It's an ideal spot. Weather's ideal, we hope. And that it's going to make us, we're looking forward to it helping us be a good team.
So that's a big highlight of our show today, Mr. Benson, and a whole lot more still to come from the NFL owners meetings where John DeShazer is on the ground for NewOrleansSaints.com. We'll bring him in for his reaction to his visit with Mr. Benson and an update on all that's going on this Tuesday. And we'll do so right after a quick timeout.
Hey there, what you having?
What kind of specials do you have today?
Well, tonight we're doing $2 benzene and tonics, $4 lemon arsenics, and $5 beryllium bombs.
Wait, what? Those don't sound like drinks. They sound like types of poison.
Well, it's a fine line. Besides, this is a smoky bar. What do you think we're all breathing in right now?
I don't know. Nicotine?
Listen, I'm gonna hook you up. You're not really living until you've had a formaldehyde martini.
Yeah, I'm going home.
Secondhand smoke does more than just stink. It costs Louisiana thousands of lives and contains dozens of harmful chemicals that lead to things like emphysema, heart disease, and lung cancer. Learn what's being done to protect all Louisianans in bars and gaming facilities at letsbetotallyclear.org.
Follow us on Twitter at Black Blue Report.
Well, we just heard from John DeShazer moments ago in his one-on-one visit with Saints and Pelicans owner Tom Benson at the NFL owners' meetings in Orlando. And as promised, we bring in John DeShazer. He's on the ground in Orlando covering for NewOrleansSaints.com. John, nice visit with Mr. Benson. How was he this morning?
Yeah, he was in great spirits. You know, bubbly, as he often is, and pretty chatty.
He seemed rather optimistic about the prospect of a Super Bowl returning in 2018, didn't he?
Well, yes, he does. And I mean, you know, really, he understands, as most owners will tell you off the record or on the record, they like New Orleans as a Super Bowl city. And they want, if there were a permanent rotation, they would want New Orleans to be prominent in that permanent rotation. They have no problems with coming to New Orleans. They know that the hotel space is going to be available. They understand that proximity is huge and it's very, very conducive to having a Super Bowl in New Orleans where everything's within walking distance, you know, right around the Superdome. So they really enjoyed it. Mr. Benson feels like the city is going to put on a great show and is going to be awarded Super Bowl for 2018.
It's already going to be a big year here in New Orleans in 2018. That'd be a huge piece of a great celebration. John, I'm glad you could join us here on Black and Blue Report. I know you're really busy. Set the scene for us here on this Tuesday at the NFL owners meetings. What's been going on?
Well, this morning they just had a lot of meetings, committee meetings. And the true votes on, you know, potential rules adjustments and bylaw modifications won't happen until Wednesday, tomorrow. So we'll learn then about whether, you know, there's going to be a vote to extend the goalposts, 5 feet higher so that you can better tell, you know, whether field goals are successful or not, or whether or not the line of scrimmage for the two-point convert for the PAT, excuse me, the point after is going to be moved back from the 2 to the 25 and make it a more competitive play. You know, because it's about a 99.6% success rate kicking PATs right now, and they want to make it a little bit more of a competitive play. And it might make it more conducive to teams, you know, going for that two-point conversion from the two-yard line, because basically you can go 50% and achieve the same success rate, basically, as you will kicking two PATs from 42 yards out. So, you know, that'll be a lot to think about, and especially for a team with an offense as good as the Saints, if you want to put them on the two-yard line and say, you know, go for two. Well, if you can be successful, you know, 70-80% of the time, that's going to be really, really, you know, effective for your offense. So, you know, those rules changes will be discussed and voted upon tomorrow, Wednesday.
I know that's certainly on the mind of Saints General Manager and Executive Vice President Mickey Loomis. You visited with him, and I want to play that here on the Black and Blue Report. Give us an idea of what we're going to hear here in your visit with Mickey.
Well, he'll be talking a little bit about the potential rule changes, but also about, you know, what the Saints have done this offseason and how he feels the team has addressed their needs and how they've approached this offseason. You know, they were pressed against the salary cap and yet were able to sign the Jarris Bird, so, you know, the biggest free agent safety on the market. So, you know, he'll be talking about that. And also about the split training camp between West Virginia and New Orleans and the thought process that went into that.
All right, let's listen into that now. Here's John DeShazer in Orlando today for NewOrleansSaints.com, visiting with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis.
And Mickey, obviously some rules modifications and bylaws changes, possible ones are top of the list
at this meeting. Any stand out to you?
Well, you know, there's a number of proposals relative to instant replay that are interesting, and it'll be interesting to hear the discussion tomorrow about that. I'm trying to remember everything that's on the agenda. Obviously, there's some rule changes that have to do with, clear recoveries and fumbles. There's some other things like extending the goalposts in order to more accurately reflect whether a field goal was made or not made if it goes over the top of the goalpost. So there's some things that are interesting. I don't know that there's anything that is very dramatic outside of the instant replay changes.
Now, this offseason, obviously, the franchise has made several moves. People thought you were really, really pressed against the cap, and yet you were able to get Jarris Byrd, the top free agent safety on the market. Let's talk about your assessment of what the team has been able to do this offseason.
Well, first of all, we were pressed up and are pressed up against the cap, so that's accurate. But each year we've been able to, try to find a few things that we can do to improve our team, and we're able to do that again this year. The thing about being pressed up against the cap, I think more than anything else, it just reduces your margin of error. And so we've got to be accurate in our assessments and our evaluations of the players that we bring in. We've got to be accurate in how they can help us. Hopefully we are. Each year, we go into an off season and we've got 19 or 20, action items that we need to accomplish in our view. And we've been able to hit on a number of those things. A lot of them involve bringing our own players back. We've been able to do that with Zach Streif and several other guys, Ramon Humber and some other players. But we've still got some work to do in that area. But signing Jarris and Eric Lorig, I think will hopefully improve our football team. That's where our intention was.
Now, you've spoken previously about how emotional it is to have to part with players who have been with the program for a certain amount of time. But I guess the flip side is, how pleasing is it to be able to agree to terms with guys like Zach Streif and Pierre Thomas?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, those two guys in particular have been with us since 2006, 2007, and both of them have what I would call come the hard way. The seventh round pick in Zach's case, and undrafted free agent in Pierre's case. And they've been, significant contributors, great players and great people for us, great representatives of the Saints in the city and in our state. They'll live forever in Saints lore, and it's just real good to see that their time, with the Saints isn't over. It's going to continue.
Now, the Saints have chosen to split training camp this season between New Orleans and West Virginia. Talk about the thought process that goes behind a decision like that.
Well, we've got a couple things involved with that. The first is, one thing that I believe in, and Sean and I have talked about a lot, is that every so often, every 3 or 4 or 5 years, we need to change things up and do things a little differently. Change venues, if you will, for training camp. I think that interjects an energy and a newness to training camp period, and I think that helps our football team. The other part is, I think it would be good for us to get out of the extreme heat for a training camp or two or three and see what kind of effect that has on our football team. We've got those two factors that always exist, and we started talking about the Greenbrier a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, and because of circumstances we didn't make a change prior to this, but all those elements fell in place this year, and so we're looking forward to going there and spending the first half of our training camp there, and then we'll have an open training camp when we return. Our fans will get a great opportunity to see our team practice and prepare for this upcoming regular season when we get back.
Mickey, we also know that one of the possible rules modifications that is being talked about will be moving the PAT yard line back from the 2 yard line to the 25, basically a 42 yard extra point attempt. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's interesting because my first reaction would be,
we don't want to do that. And yet, when you start looking at, you know, some of the statistics, the frequency or the infrequency of a missed PAT, you know, we were, I think, at 99.6% last year, and it's been hovering around that 99% percentile for a number of years. So it's really an automatic play. And so there's some discussion about changing that from an automatic play to something you know, is more exciting and may impact the game, you know, at some level. When you look at historically the statistics, even on field goals, if you go back to 1966, for example, the accuracy from 50 yards and out was negligible, and now it's, you know, 67%. So, obviously the kickers in our game have become much more proficient, much more accurate, and so, I would say we're open-minded in terms of, you know, making the extra point a play that has at least some element or some impact in the game. A field goal currently of 42 yards, I think 40 yards is roughly an 80-85% proposition, maybe even a little higher than that. So at least there's the opportunity, not to gain that point. And that may cause, you know, more two-point conversions, which I think is an exciting play in our game. So it's going to be talked about and discussed, and I'm interested in other viewpoints.
All right, so there's J.D.'s visit with Mr. Loomis this morning. Also speaking today at the NFL owners' meetings were, John, the AFC coaches went today?
Yeah, the AFC coaches went today. NFC coaches will go tomorrow morning.
Sean Payton will be a part of our Black and Blue report tomorrow as a result of that. Today, though, John, I know that you you got a chance to visit with several different coaches, and certainly Jarris Bird's impact of signing with the Saints is felt by those that either coached him or coached against him in the AFC. I want to play a little collection of some of those sound bites. Who are we going to hear from here?
We'll hear from Dennis Allen, the Oakland Raiders coach. He used to be the secondary coach for the Saints, a guy who has evaluated Jarris Bird over the years. Also, the New York Jets coach, Rex Ryan, you know, Rob Ryan's twin brother, Saints defensive coordinator, Rob Ryan. So he has some great things to say about Jarris Bird. And Miami Dolphins coach, Joe Philbin, also.
I liked him.
You know,
I thought he was a really good player.
I think we'll talk about Jarris Bird, who actually, coached him. And then Doug Marrone, we also spoke to him.
Mickey
Buffalo
and Sean.
Bills,
and
or guys who played against him in the AFC.
They do a good job in personnel acquisition. And they kind of, they do a real good job of identifying exactly the player that they want that fits, you know, what they need. So, I thought the player was a good player, and I thought it was a good acquisition for him.
Man, I'm glad. You know, I'm glad they picked him up. He's out of our division. I'm also glad for my brother. He should do a tremendous job there, teaming him up with. I probably can't even say. I'm not supposed to talk about anybody else's players, but I guess it's okay to talk about my twin brother. But they'll do a great job there. Their defense is probably the most improved defense in the history of the National Football League. So there's some encouraging sights, things going on there.
Very productive football player. He's very instinctive. His play speed is very good. And, he can kind of make those impact plays that everybody looks for.
Well, I think he has great leadership to whichever team he goes to. I think he's a great pro. And I think his play speaks for itself. You know, he's a proven playmaker in this league. And he'll be very, very successful.
All right, John, you've had a very busy morning, to say the least. Anything else on tap throughout the afternoon at the NFL owners' meetings, or do we kind of just get set for tomorrow at this point?
Yeah, I think we'll pretty much get set for tomorrow. Unless something happens, drastic, I don't think anything else is going to happen. Most of the committee meetings have wrapped up. The coaches, in fact, have scattered, to the north winds, pretty much trying to figure out what they're going to do with the rest of their day. And I think the owners pretty much have retired for the day also. So, basically, we're done for this day, and all the big stuff will come out tomorrow.
One more thing to bring up with you, because I read this on Twitter a short time ago, and you never know how valid things are. But one of the, I guess, more minor things being talked about and perhaps even voted on already today is the fact that the NFL is going to ban dunking the football over the crossbar after scores and then assessing a penalty if that's done. That would certainly impact Jimmy Graham and the New Orleans Saints, and I can't say I'm a huge fan of the new rule if that's the case.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if it's specifically on the agenda, but it is one of those items that can be brought to fruition, and it can be voted upon if it's, you know, put on the floor. And I think it was proposed by all people by the Falcons. And ironically, I think that was the goalpost that Jimmy dunked in Atlanta and bent it. And now the funny thing about that is, of course, the Falcons had a player who would dunk the goalpost also. That was Tony Gonzalez, who is now retired. So, you know, now that Tony Gonzalez is retired, they don't want, you know, the goalpost to be dunked. And so, yeah, it'll affect it'll affect Jimmy's celebration, of course. But, you know, if you get to the end zone another, you know, 14, 15, 16 times as he did last season, I think he'll figure out something else to do.
You know, all this is going to do is fuel the people who call the NFL the No Fun League. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, something just ought to be left alone. I mean, they leave well enough alone. Okay, the guy dunks a goalpost, and one time he hangs on one, and yeah, he knows better than that. But, I mean, certainly, I mean, one, they straightened out the goalpost. In fact, we were at that game, if I'm not mistaken, in Atlanta, so it's not like it, you know, took away from the game or anything like that. You know, the game was still played, and everything was fine. So
I'll
let these guys have some fun. I mean, they have to adhere to so many rules as it is. Allow them to be individuals sometimes.
John, they had that goalpost in Atlanta, and you and I were both there. They had that goalpost straightened out in Atlanta quicker than the stupid television timeouts they take after kickoffs. Okay?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not like he bent it permanently and it couldn't be fixed. I mean, the thing tilted a little bit. They straightened it out, and the game went on.
Well, there you go. Enjoy the rest of your day in Orlando, my friend. I know tomorrow we're excited because you'll be with Coach Payton on the ground there in Orlando, and we're going to feature a lot of that on the Wednesday Black and Blue Report. So rest up. You've got a big day with us tomorrow, my friend.
Will do. Will do.
John DeShazer with us here from the NFL owners meetings in Orlando on the Black and Blue Report. Our coverage of those meetings continues on NewOrleansSaints.com and, of course, tomorrow here on the Black and Blue Report. Coming up next, we'll talk college baseball. Tulane and LSU renew their rivalry tonight, and we'll check in with the voice of the Green Wave, Todd Graffinini, right after this.
Every year, people who statistics say would die from a serious health problem come to Ochsner and live. To us, nothing proves quality more than saving a life no one else could. In fact, on average, statistics say patients who come here are more likely to survive than at other hospitals in the state. Incredible outcomes aren't just happening at one hospital either. 7 of the top hospitals in the state for survival rates are Ochsner. We're also Louisiana's only hospital ranked by U.S. News & World Report in 8 different specialties, and number 1 in the country by CareChex for liver transplant. It's no wonder people from all over the world come here. A higher quality of care. One more reason to choose Ochsner. And with hospitals and health centers all over the region, connecting is as easy as finding the Ochsner name. Learn more about why quality matters at OchsnerQuality.org. Ochsner, healthcare with peace of mind.
Want each show delivered right to your iPhone or iPad? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes by searching Black and Blue Report.
Black and Blue Report takes a turn to college baseball, and why not? One of the rites of spring around these parts is when Tulane and LSU match up in their great baseball rivalry. That renews itself tonight at Greer Field Turchin Stadium over in Uptown New Orleans. And with that, we welcome in the voice of the Green Wave and a good friend, Ty Graffinini. Morning, Graff.
Morning, Sean. Good to be on with you today. It's always a big day here in the state when we're talking about college baseball and these two teams getting going.
There really have been some great ones over the years, haven't there? I mean, look at this rivalry, which goes back, you know, over 200 meetings. I just, every time that I've looked at this game, I always have to throw records out. And I know that sounds so cliche, but it sure is a lot of fun. And I know it gets a lot of folks fired up around the state, as you mentioned.
No question. And even, you know, when we've been down the last couple of years, there's no secret about that. But it always gets the fans fired up. And look, Sean, you've been a part of it, too. I mean, you go back to 02. I mean, we're in the Superdome, and there's 20,000 people there, or 27,000. What am I saying? I mean, that broke the NCAA record. We've had Super Regionals at Zephyr Field, and 33,000 people in three days. Every time we played the ball game in this new ballpark, we've set records. So, you know, people want to see these two teams play, and hopefully we'll give them a game tonight.
You know, the one place I didn't see the game was at Tulane. After I left,
right.
the ballpark finally got put back together and done right, and the series is now a campus event on both campuses. But if I looked back, and maybe I just need your help here, if you think about old Alec Box, the Superdome, as you mentioned, Zephyr Field, has there been a favorite venue for you where this series has been played?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. Boy, look, nothing will ever, in my mind, replace what happened at Zephyr Field in 01. I mean, that was one of the greatest events. We're not talking about, you know, college baseball. We're talking about events, sporting or what have you, in the state of Louisiana and in the history of the state. When those two teams got together for the right to go to Omaha, it would have been Tulane's first ever College World Series. And, of course, it was Skip Bertman, his career was ending as the head coach. You're talking about the highest rated television broadcasts in the history of local television here. That to me will never be equaled. It was just the perfect venue at the perfect time. When you talked about the amount of tailgate space out there at Zephyr Field and the parking lots being, you know, you always hear when you're talking about college football, Sean, how many people stay in the parking lot and not even go in the ball game? Well, it was the same case back in 01, but because people just couldn't get tickets, there was no way you were getting in that ballpark unless you had a ticket. And, you know, there were 11,000 plus tickets. There was not a seat in the stands. There was not a seat on that levee in right center field. And you had thousands more in the parking lots all weekend long. So I guess for, you know, favorite venue, that's got to be it. As far as the two teams meeting. But it's been a lot of fun doing the games on campus because, like you said, you weren't here when we actually played them back at the old Turgeon Stadium. But once Zephyr Field got built, we played out there from 98 to 08. It was a decade. So it's nice to get them back here where, you know, fans now can tailgate out in right field.
There's no doubt. Hey, before we continue, I do have to ask you about Tulane head coach Rick Jones. The athletic department, I think, released a statement last night regarding Coach Jones and his situation. What can you tell us from the university side on what's going on with Rick?
Well, it's just, again, you know, I can tell you this. I saw him Friday, Sean, and we were getting ready to play Middle Tennessee and for the three-game series. And Coach was here on Friday, and he just did not look – he didn't look good. And he was actually just – he was sent home that day. He did not he did not coach the game. He was out the rest of the weekend. I know he saw the doctor yesterday, and our doctor, Greg Stewart, said you're not ready to go back. So he's just, again, really under the weather right now. And we know he's not going to be here tonight, and we know he's not going to make the trip with us to West Virginia this weekend. And, look, I know Coach very, very well. I've known him for 21 years. There is nothing he would rather do than be here, especially with a game like tonight. But he's just, again, not healthy enough right now to be out here. So, again, we're thinking about him, and hopefully he'll be back very, very soon.
We certainly wish him the best. But I'll say this. It'll be weird having the Tigers and the Greenies go at it tonight without the one constant over the last 20-some years, and that's Rick Jones. LSU's changed their coach. Players have come and gone. But over two decades now, the one constant is Rick Jones in this series.
No question. Going back to 94, and we had a 94 team reunion 1 week before opening day, and a lot of those guys came back, and we had a great time. As a matter of fact, you were there yesterday for the show where that reunion was at Desi Vegas, and we had a great time. And, you know, that was a special, special group. And Coach Jones has always talked about it. That was the most fun he's ever had coaching a team because that was a bunch of seniors who had a brand new coach. They had no idea about how Rick Jones would come in. And he basically turned those guys loose, and they had fun playing ball. They weren't worried about getting drafted or moving on as far as professional career. They were just playing, and it was so much fun. Now you think about it, that was my third year doing games, Sean. I was 23 years old at the time, so I was basically as old as those guys were. That was as much fun for me as doing the games on the radio as those guys were playing. And it was a memorable year. And we actually wound up sweeping LSU that year, beat them at the old Turchin Stadium. Scott Sidwell, who's now the athletic director at San Francisco, hit two home runs that night and outscored them. And Brian Gibbs got Todd Walker to pop up with the bases loaded and two outs in the ninth inning and then beat them up there at Alec Box. And that really helped us get to a regional that year. So, yeah, no, Coach has been a part of this game for all those years, and it's going to be very strange to not see him in the dugout tonight.
You mentioned your age at that time. Isn't it great how those kids never get old, and they all stay the same age, and all we do is get older?
No question. Look, I if you look at the calendar, technically I'm old, you know, but I don't feel it. It's fun. I mean, look, we got great jobs, Sean. I mean, you go to the arena every night, and I get to come to the ballpark or go to the arena or the football stadium. I mean, I can't complain one bit doing what I'm doing, and no matter what our record is, I'm a pretty lucky guy, and just fortunate to be a part of games like tonight, and, you know, on a yearly basis, and then we'll head out on Thursday and go play a weekend up in Charleston, West Virginia. So I can't complain one bit.
That's an amazing factor in this series, that both teams from different conferences always have to put their best foot forward against a rival, but yet have to get ready for their respective conference series on the weekend. All right, Graf, here's a deep one for you. This one may take you a second. Think back over your 20-some years now in this rivalry. Pick for me an LSU player and a Tulane player that sticks as the largest thorn in the other side. Johnny Kaplan comes to mind for me on the Tulane side, but I know there's more.
Well, I can tell you this much, and you know Cappy very, very well, having done a lot of his games. I can honestly say to this day, I have never heard a college baseball player booed in any environment other than Alec Box Stadium. That is the definition of thorn in the side. There's no doubt about it. So I would say, yes, definitely Kaplan to LSU. As far as LSU to Tulane, boy, oh, boy. I can tell you one guy who just absolutely murdered us, and that was Eddie Furness. He was just – he when he left LSU, and again, this is one of the greatest college baseball players to ever play. He left as the all-time RBI – leader in SEC history, and he did not go into professional baseball. He went to med school and became a doctor. But every year, and I believe Eddie's senior year was 98, if I'm not mistaken, for those years early on, just to watch that guy hit, and we could never ever get him out. And, you know, they had beaten us. I talked about the 94 team. We swept that series. We did not beat them again till the first game we ever played them in Zephyr Field in 98. And in that game, we had led the entire ball game up until the ninth inning. We're up by one run, and Eddie Furness comes up with the bases loaded in the ninth and whacks a triple in the left center field. And all of a sudden, you blink, and we're down by two, and you're thinking, oh, my goodness gracious, they did it to us again. And then Jason Sparks came up in the bottom of the ninth and hit a three-run homer, and Tulane won the game. But that was Eddie Furness to me in a nutshell, was just coming up in clutch situations like that and getting the job done. So I think, again, right off the top of my head, the first guy I think of is Eddie Furness.
No doubt. Good one there. Hey, let's wrap up our visit and kind of get in the moment here. LSU's off to a great, great start at 24-1. They're rolling. Tulane, meanwhile, at 12-11. Give us a little preview of what's to come tonight and who maybe the major players are in this one.
Well, hopefully, Sean, we can get enough innings out of Corey Merrill. Now, I'm pretty 99.9% positive. I mean, Merrill's going to pitch. We know that. But just talking to Coach Suter yesterday at the show, They're going to staff this one. You're going to see a bunch because, again, we got to fly up to West Virginia on Thursday, and we got a pretty big weekend coming up against Marshall up there. So I think they're going to try to give as many guys an inning as possible. And quite frankly, it's very difficult to hit when you come up every time and you see another guy. So I think ideally you'd like to see Merrill get you at least two innings tonight and possibly three. And then I think you'll see at least four or five more pitchers for Tulane. And hopefully in the back end, if Kyle McKenzie comes in, who has just been absolute lights out in the back end of our bullpen this year. If McKenzie comes in, we got a pretty good chance to win it. The thing that I'm concerned about is, are we going to score enough runs? I know Cody Glenn is pitching for LSU, and he has struggled. But our lineup right now is just trying to find a way to get some consistency. We got the kind of lineup, Sean, that, you know, you can see us bat around in an inning, you know, but send 9-10 to the plate, score four runs, and then not get a hit for four or five more innings. I've seen it this year a couple of times, actually. So it's just been very, very inconsistent. It's a young lineup. They're still trying to gel. Richard Carthon has been our catalyst. He's been our leadoff hitter all year long, leads the team with a .330 batting average. He gets on base 47% of the time. When he gets on, we got a shot. Andrew Garner and Garrett DeShampoo are going to have to come up big for us in the three and four spots. If those guys are able to produce, we're going to have ourselves a chance here tonight. Because, again, as I sit in our radio booth tonight right now, Sean, the wind's blowing in. It's a gorgeous day, but it's going to be chilly here tonight. The wind's blowing in. The ball is not going to carry at all. So I would expect a low-scoring game here tonight.
Good enough, that's for sure. He's already in the booth. That's the voice of the Green Wave, Ty Graffinini, with us here on the Black and Blue Report. No stranger to getting there early to the ballpark, that's for sure. Graff, I hope you have a great call tonight, and we hope for all of Southeast Louisiana college baseball, we have another memorable one to talk about tomorrow morning. Appreciate it.
I do too, and Sean, great. Another great win by the Pels, man. They're rolling.
It's been fun to watch the last couple weeks. Hey, 12 to go. You never know what these guys are going to do. That's for sure.
Hey,
so
Get on a roll.
All right, Graff, take care. That's Ty Graffinini with us on the Black and Blue Report. And we'll wrap up today's program on this Tuesday after this.
Here's a valuable lesson I've learned as an Entergy customer. Saving energy saves you money. And the online videos at EntergySavings.com show you how. A few simple projects can make a big difference in your bill. In just a few hours, I knocked my monthly bill down by 20%. It was easy. From caulking windows to programming your thermostat, the Entergy videos walk you through it. Visit EntergySavings.com and start saving today. That's the power of people. Entergy.
There's no better time to join your Pelicans as we take flight. All-star Anthony Davis is taking his team to the next level, and the Pelicans are soaring to new heights. 2014-15 season tickets are on sale now and start at less than $300, with lower bowl options as low as $37 per game. Season ticket benefits include the best seat locations, discounts on concessions, and much more. Take flight with the Pelicans. For more info, call 525-HOOP or visit Pelicans.com today.
Welcome back to the Black and Blue Report.
Great show for you on this Tuesday. Well, I guess I'm patting myself on the back a little bit, but certainly patting producer Daniel Salerson on the back, too. Lots to stick in on this Tuesday, and I'm glad you were with us. This is why we do this podcast here for Saints and Pelicans fans. Well, we can recap a win last night like the Pelicans had against the New Jersey Nets. I didn't do it at all last night, but here I did today on the show. Against the Brooklyn Nets in overtime last night, and then all the happenings over in Orlando at the NFL owners' meetings, we provided you with some content today, no doubt about that. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, whether you're a Tulane or LSU fan, enjoy that baseball game tonight. Then we'll be right back here with you tomorrow for another edition of the Black and Blue Report. On the Wednesday show, David Wesley joins us to talk Pelicans and Clippers, and John DeShazer rejoins us from Orlando, and we'll hear from Saints head coach Sean Payton tomorrow as well. Looking forward to that. And again, thanks for joining us here on the Black and Blue Report, the podcast for Saints and Pelicans fans. I'm Sean Kelly in Studio B on Airline Drive, saying so long for just a while.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Black and Blue Report. If all goes well, we'll be back tomorrow. Tune in each weekday at 12 p.m. or at your convenience exclusively online at NewOrleansSaints.com and Pelicans.com. Follow your teams direct from the source, the Black and Blue Report.